Hey, everyone, and welcome to At the Letters for Thursday, October the 3rd, 2024. The 2024 season is in the books. It is done. Yeah, that was a rough one. I'm here to talk about more so next steps and to take a look back at the press conference, the season-ending press conference from Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins that happened just the other day on Wednesday. It is just me here today, Ben Nicholson-Smith, no Arden Swelling. He is en route to, I'm not sure exactly where, but he's en route to the ALDS, New York, I think, where he will start coverage of the division series in a day or two. So look for that. But in the meantime, I'm here. And I did want to kind of weigh in just because, I mean, this is a pretty significant press conference for the Blue Jays. I'm going to go rapid fire. It's not going to be a long podcast, but I'm basically going to break down some of the more interesting moments, some of the more significant revelations from that press conference. Then I'll take a break. Then I will basically look ahead at what's next and how the Blue Jays can try to turn this around from an 88 loss season where so many things went wrong to a playoff push next year, to a playoff team next year. I mean, that's a long way to go. So I'll look at that in the second segment. But to start, Ross Atkins is back. That is the news from the Blue Jays press conference that occurred down at Rogers Center yesterday. Not a stunning piece of news at this point. For anyone who's listened to At the Letters, we were saying last week that that's how the signs were pointing. And even like I think back to, I forget exactly when it was, but this is maybe like late July or something. And Arden said that he thought Ross Atkins was going to come back as GM. And at that point in time, remember, it wasn't that long ago, but a few months ago, Arden says that and people are like, whoa, like, wow, Ross Atkins is going to come back. And here he is. So that is the reality, that Ross Atkins is back. Now, we could do full podcasts on the ups and downs of this front office and the good moves that they've made, which now feel sort of distant, and the moves that they've made that haven't worked out that are much more recent and much more present in our minds. So I don't know that now is necessarily the time to do that. I think with Atkins, the part that sticks with me a little bit from this one is that everyone agrees that he needs to do better in 2025. And starting really now, heading into this offseason, he needs to do better. And this is Ross Atkins saying that he needs to take a step forward. This is Mark Shapiro saying that he needs to take a step forward. This is fans, certainly. And anyone who's trying to look at it objectively or, you know, with a certain amount of remove or neutrality, I think would look at this too and say, look, the Blue Jays, they had a bad year. Their GM needs to do better. So that is something that everyone agrees on. Ross Atkins needs to do better. And the Blue Jays need that from him if they are going to turn this thing around and be a competitive team next year. So we could dive into that from all kinds of different angles. Clearly, there is a lot of frustration on the part of fans that Ross Atkins is back and that Mark Shapiro didn't make a change. That's completely understandable when you look at where this team is at and where this franchise is at. But now we know Ross Atkins is going to be back. There was not a change there. There was a change on the hitting front. And these changes are kind of ongoing. So this is not final by any stretch, but they have an open hitting coach role at this point with Guillermo Martinez out of the picture. He is not going to return, not invited back. Dom Mattingly will still be on the coaching staff, but he will not be the offensive coordinator as he was this year. So that creates a vacancy. What does that mean? I would expect that Matt Hague is involved in some form, whether it's in his current role or whether he gets a promotion. And also the Jays are going to look outside and see if there's a way to find some good hitting instruction from outside the organization. So we will see where that leads. I think that it clearly hasn't been working the last couple of years, right? You look at the offensive performance, these hitters have, in a lot of cases, not trended in the right direction. I understand why they would make a change here. I think that, you know, as recently as last year, I was saying that it could be time to move on from Guillermo Martinez. That didn't happen at the time. They instead made a change to Don Mattingly while keeping Guillermo Martinez in place. And the Mattingly thing, like, it's interesting. Having been around the team, of course, the last couple of years, and as Don Mattingly's become a part of this staff, it's interesting getting to know him just a little bit and getting to know his vibe a little bit. And you can really see like where the nickname Donnie Baseball comes from. Like this guy, he loves the game to the point where he's out there, you know, he had the shoulder surgery late in the season at some point, maybe with a month or so to go in the season, but he's still out there like fielding ground balls with a sling around his shoulder. He's just wanting to be a part of the game, wanting to be close to the game, involved, to contribute. So, you know, this is a guy who has something to offer to a major league coaching staff, loves fielding those throws over at first base before the game. You know, at the same time, it doesn't mean he has to be the hitting coach. You know, there are other people who can go about that in a very kind of granular way, who can do those flips in the cage before the game, who can do that role and leave Mattingly to the bench coach role. So we'll see what that leads to. Really, to a large extent, it comes down to the hitters that you have on the team too. So I'm not sure that there was any amount of coaching that was going to make, you know, Ernie Clement draw, you know, walks all the time, or there was any amount of coaching that was going to turn Spencer Horwitz into a 40 homer hitter. Or Daniel Vogelbach into a 20 homer hitter. At a certain point, you've got what you've got. So we'll see how they go about filling that void. But that is a big question for this team as they go ahead into the offseason. Another thing that stood out from this one was the Vlad Jr. discussion to me. I thought it was really interesting when this is going back a few days ago to Saturday in John Schneider's office before the second last game of the season. And someone asked John Schneider if he thought that Vlad Jr. was a generational player. And there was no hesitation. John Schneider said yes. He thinks that he is. And a few days later, Mark Shapiro asked that same question. Is Vlad Jr. a generational player? And we heard Mark Shapiro kind of pause a little bit and contemplate the question and give an answer that was less than a resounding yes.
I don't know, generational player, like what's your definition of that? He's one of the better offensive players in the game today. You know, I'm not sure, and certainly has the opportunity to be a generational player, you know, because of how young he is. So, but that's to make that decree at 26 years old is not, you know, he has the opportunity to be a generational player. It's tough. You know, when you go to the
look, I mean, from one standpoint, okay, he's answering the question, and we want honest answers when we ask questions. I think to another extent, there was an opportunity here for Mark Shapiro simply to talk about the good things that Vlad Jr. does. And there is no shortage of good things that Vlad Jr. does, especially after the year that he had. I mean, this guy on a team that was going nowhere, on a team that had so little lineup protection and so few other really good storylines this season, Vladdy was a monster from start to finish. This guy had an amazing season. He had some great defensive games. He had some great base running moments. He played third base for this team at a time that they needed a third baseman and they needed someone to step up into that role.
Here's one to him. Couldn't come up with it, or it would have been a double play, but what a great play at third by Guerrero.
I'll tell you one thing, you just can't teach that. That is flat out baseball instincts right there.
And most importantly and most significantly, he was, by any objective measure, one of the five or six best offensive players in the sport, along with Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, Bobby Witt Jr., Yordan Alvarez. Like, he's in that category of hitter.
And Vladdy launches one deep left field and gone. It disappears into the Boston night. A booming three-run homer for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Look, this doesn't mean that we're trying to put Vlad Guerrero Jr. in Cooperstown today. He's got a lot of work to do. He's not at that point. Clearly, no 25-year-old player is, but I still think this was a chance just to say, you know what? Vladdy's amazing. This guy is, we're so excited to have him on our team. This guy is a huge part of this franchise. It's not the way that Mark Shapiro went. End of the day, does it really matter? I don't think it really matters because I'm sure Vlad Jr. has seen those comments by now. I'm not saying he listened to the whole press conference back, but it would have crossed his radar that those comments were made. And end of the day, I think it comes down to actions, which is to say, what do the Blue Jays offer? And for how many years? For how many dollars? If they make him a great offer, I don't think anyone's going to be sitting there worrying about something that Mark Shapiro said. So from that standpoint, this is something that's easy to overcome. But maybe it's an indication as to how Mark Shapiro views this question of how to approach a potential extension with Vlad Jr. Maybe it's a search for some leverage. I don't know. Maybe we're reading too much into it, but we'll see. And yeah, to me, Vladdy is a generational player. Not that anyone's asking me, but my opinion is that, yeah, he is. You look at his numbers through age 25, they compare really favorably to some of the really, really good players out there, whether it's a Frank Thomas, whether it's his dad, who, of course, did end up in the Hall of Fame, whether it's Miguel Cabrera. His numbers are really on that level through age 25 with a lot of work to do. And look, you need some good players to build around, right? At this point, the Jays have one 20-homer hitter in their lineup. It's Vladdy. This, to me, it's really not rocket science here. You're looking to try to build a good team. You need a good offense. He's a young player in his prime. Seems like a really good building block who certainly has a chance to be an impact player for years and years to come. So we'll see where that leads. Kind of brings us to payroll here because, of course, if you're going to sign Vladdy, if you're going to sign a Bo Bichette, if you're going to be aggressive in free agency, you need to be able to spend. And Mark Shapiro said that he expects that the Blue Jays are going to be able to spend in the same neighborhood as they have in 2024. I asked him this question because, you know, I know, even as I was asking it, I know, of course, they're never going to say, yeah, we can go to 238 or we can go to 246. They're never going to be that precise because that takes away from their leverage when it comes to other teams, when it comes to free agent talks. But to be in that same area, to the extent that there was any kind of good news that came out of that press conference, I would say that their ability to spend in that ballpark and be a CBT paying team, that's good news. That's where they should be. They have a lot of revenue coming in. This is a team that has a ton of fan support, and that should be matched. And so for that to continue to be the case seems like a good step. That means that now it is time for the Blue Jays to go into this offseason and find ways to be a better team. And what does success look like for them? I thought that, you know, when Mark Shapiro was talking about the fact that the Blue Jays have played meaningful games in September in four of the last five seasons, you know, that was interesting to me. And, you know, to be fair to Shapiro, that was said in the context of an answer about how disappointed he is with this team. And he was kind of defending the overall, looking beyond 2024 to the overall. And look, there's no doubt that the Blue Jays have had better seasons and they've had better teams. And those good teams are a credit to Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. When you look at a team like 2021 or 22 and some of the good things that they had going on at that point. But I also think like playing meaningful baseball in a sport where not half, but almost half of the teams, 12 of the 30 teams, so you got 40% of the teams making the playoffs. So playing meaningful baseball in September, I mean, that should be the baseline. That shouldn't be anything noteworthy. That should be, you know, a given, I think. That's fair to say. Unless you're in the midst of a real kind of reset year, that should be the case every single year. I mean, we saw it took 86 wins to get into the playoffs this year. So to be playing meaningful baseball in September is not an especially meaningful feat. What would be meaningful, I think, would be winning a division, something the Jays haven't done in a long time, since 2015, would be earning a bye through the first round of the playoffs, because there is a certain amount of randomness in those early rounds. I wouldn't debate that. And I think that, you know, we saw that in play in 2022 and 23. But a way around that is to do what the Yankees and the Guardians did. Get the bye, play well enough in the regular season, build a strong enough regular season team that you're not exposed to that volatility of a three-game wildcard series. If you do that, then you're going to be in a better position to advance deep into the playoffs and to achieve the ultimate goal, which the Blue Jays, this isn't me saying this, this is what the Blue Jays have said. Mark Shapiro has said this, Ross Atkins has said this. Their goal is to bring championships to Canada. You can't move the goalpost now and say the goal is playing September baseball that's meaningful 4 to 5 years. The goal is, as they've set it out, and I think as any fan would understand it, is to win it all. And look, we all understand it's tough. You're not going to win it all every season. It's not, no one expects that every single year to end with a trophy and a parade. But you expect to get closer than the Blue Jays have. And the success for this team can't just be competing. It can't just be we're in it and, oh man, we got so close. Or we're in it and, oh, we just had this one injury at the wrong time. It's got to be to find ways around that, to find ways through that. And to actually be still playing at this time of year and for weeks to come, that's the goal. That should be the goal. The goal is not just to be competitive or not just to get bounced in the wild card. And they have a lot of work to do. So I'm going to take a look at what those next steps will look like and how, if at all, the Blue Jays can kind of nudge themselves closer to that point where they've said they want it to be and where certainly their fans want them to be. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to At the Letters, which is produced by Christian Ryan and by Nick Andrade. So thanks to Christian and to Nick for putting this together. Like I said, Arden is off on the road. I will be doing some playoff coverage as well coming up pretty soon, as well as Shai Davidi. So yeah, we've still got lots of baseball coming up. Just you know, not necessarily as much Blue Jays as when they're playing every single day for 6 months. But hey, that was, you know, a season that I think a lot of people are probably happy to move on from. 88 losses, last place finish, not nearly enough depth, not nearly enough offense, not nearly enough relief pitching. This was just not a good year. They, as an organization, they fell so far short of where they need to be. And that reflects poorly on Shapiro. It reflects poorly on Atkins because they are the people in charge of making sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen and making sure that if they're spending $240 million, they can actually have a team that's competitive and succeeding deep into October. Didn't happen. That is a really rough year. So I'm going to go rapid fire here. We're not here to take up too much of your time today. And thanks for sticking with us all season and tuning into this one. But I do want to just touch on what the offseason would look like based on what we're hearing from Shapiro, Atkins, and others as we head toward the offseason here. So pitching, let's start there. Pitching, position players, those are kind of the two categories, obviously, of what you can add if you're adding to a baseball team. So if it's pitchers, the obvious spot is bullpen. And I thought it was interesting to hear Ross Atkins say that compared to last year, where they picked up Chad Green's option for $21 million, he anticipates the Blue Jays being a little more aggressive than that. Now, at the risk of reading way too much into like one little phrase here, a little more aggressive kind of says, all right, maybe you're going 3 years. That would be new territory for the Blue Jays, who have never spent more than $21 million on a reliever under Shapiro and Atkins. But does that mean you're going to like 4 years? Are you getting an Estevez, a Hoffman? Are you going to spend on Tanner Scott to the point of like 60 over four? That would actually be a lot more aggressive than $21 million. So we'll see. Maybe the Blue Jays do go a lot more aggressive. Maybe Atkins doesn't want to tip his hand and let the whole industry know that he has a lot of money to spend, that he intends to spend on a reliever. There are a lot of different ways that this could kind of unfold from here, but there was at least a willingness on the part of the Blue Jays to be more aggressive on relievers, which is a good thing because relievers are important and they don't have many good ones. So that's a problem for the Blue Jays right now. I think that it was also interesting when afterwards he was asked about the Blue Jays closer position. He said he wasn't sure who the closer was going to be. And then asked about Jordan Romano, is Jordan Romano going to be back? Atkins declined to get into that. And Romano is arbitration eligible. He's projected to get around $8 million in 2025 if he's tendered a contract. But remember, he had arthroscopic surgery on his elbow, didn't pitch in the second half of the season. So there is a question there as to what that health of that elbow looks like. To me, it's a question of, is he tendered? There's also a question as to Eric Swanson. Atkins wasn't asked directly about Eric Swanson, but when I look at the swinging strike data, when I look at the strikeout data for Eric Swanson, this to me is probably more of a minor league deal candidate than someone that you need to guarantee $3.2 million to. We'll see where that goes. But in any case, the bullpen will be a priority for the Jays. It has to be. It's so obvious. Like, everyone knows that. It's going to be a priority. But at the same time, Atkins left the door open to being in the market for starting pitching. And I think this is a good thing for the Jays to be open-minded here, because maybe you sign the right starter and someone gets injured and boom, all of a sudden your depth kind of disappears. You needed this guy the whole time. Or maybe you stay healthy, you sign a starter. Let's say a Sean Manaea, get him for 3 years. He looks great. Boom, he's in the rotation. Maybe that puts Uriel Rodriguez into the bullpen for a bit. Now you've still helped your overall pitching staff. So we'll see where that goes, but I thought that was interesting that they left the door open to some starting pitching. Keep an eye on the Pacific Rim as far as pitching additions for the Blue Jays this offseason. Now, position players. I'm going rapid fire here. There's a lot of nuance here. We could spend a whole hour talking about Brent Rooker. That will do a different day. But as I look at this thing, there are a few spots the Jays could kind of most easily upgrade. Second base, third base, left field. They're obviously going to look for a backup catcher. Technically, they could move Vladdy to third. I see that as being not the most delicate solution to all of this. I think that it would raise some questions defensively, and I think you got a good thing going with him at first base. So I look at second, I look at third, I look at left field, and I kind of presented it to Atkins that way. And I said, hey, you know, are those the positions? And he hesitated a little bit. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he said, yeah, but we also feel really good about our alternatives at second base. And he points to Will Wagner, Leo Jimenez, Ernie Clement as internal guys that they like at second base.
Lined up the middle, juggled and caught by Clement for the out.
Well, he never gave up on it. He gloved it, thought he had it. It popped out of his glove and he stayed with it to make the catch.
So now I'm thinking, all right, maybe second is less likely as a target for the Jays. Now, third base. What about that? Well, he said, you know, some of those same guys could help a third, as well as Addison Barger. By the way, Andy Ibañez for the Tigers, lefty masher, big hit against the Astros. That's the kind of player who would actually really help the Jays, but in any case. So this leaves left field is probably the most obvious spot for the Blue Jays to upgrade their offense. So if they're going to get an everyday position player, someone who just helps the offense, maybe it's a cleanup hitter, someone who really nudges this thing forward and gives the Blue Jays that offensive depth that they've lacked and that they need, then left field could be a position to look at there. But, you know, as ever, the Jays are not going to close things off. And, you know, this is where I want to kind of get to the pull back the curtain part of the podcast a little bit. Because this is a time, these next 4 weeks, where for non-playoff teams, it's a little window to prepare. It's a chance to prepare for what's next. And I was asking John Schneider about this a little bit, what his month of October looks like. He's pretty involved. It sounds as though, and this is probably not a surprise to anyone who knows John Schneider, but this is someone who pays pretty close, really close attention to the details. So he was in the process of having meetings with his coaches, talking to players. He said he tries to give players some space in the first month of the offseason, but Schneider's at the player development complex in Florida a lot in the course of November, December, January. He's there most days, most weekdays in any case, to pop in for the morning and check in with players, check in with prospects, coaches. So I thought that was interesting. He also said that in the course of November, December, January, that he would hear from all of his players once every couple of weeks, which that honestly surprised me. And I said that to him and I was like, wow, this is more than I thought, because I would have guessed that they kind of totally left those guys alone. But yeah, they check in pretty often. So that is all unfolding now from the standpoint of the coaching staff. The players themselves are maybe taking a little bit of time to rest. They're also going to try to condition themselves and build on, you know, what they can for 2025. So they don't really take a ton of time to rest in today's game. It's pretty full on. It's pretty much a 12 months a year job when the expectations are that high. So hopefully they get at least a week or two now to just sort of chill. But then the front office, it's an interesting time for them too, because the front office can't phone up free agents, obviously. Juan Soto's still playing. Alex Bregman was playing until like a couple days ago. So you can't just phone up those free agents. That is like not allowed. The season is still underway for all intents and purposes. The Jays are now in preparation mode. So this is where it's like a really interesting time. And I know that in anticipation of the pursuit of Shohei Ohtani, they did a lot of diligence on him as a person, to try to understand him as a person beyond just, hey, you're really good, we can give you a lot of money, would you sign here? And I don't know to what extent they do that for your kind of more ordinary free agents. It's obviously not to the same extent as you would for a once-in-a-lifetime player like Shohei Ohtani. But I still actually think that there is a ton of value for a front office to gain from really trying to dive in and like understand these free agents as individuals. And the reason I say that is I think that you can, as a front office, potentially save yourself a lot of time and make the time that you do spend pursuing free agents more efficient, which is to say, let's say, okay, let's say right now you've got a few weeks, you've got a big front office. Let's say you go and some members of this front office could in theory be assigned the task. And again, I don't know if this actually happens. So this is like, this might be like total fan fiction here. But I think that some front office employees could theoretically be assigned the task of like going through and trying to understand everything you can about the free agents in whom the Blue Jays might have some real interest. So whether it's a Manaea, a Tanner Scott, Anthony Santander, whether it's, you know, a Kyle Higashioka, anyone from the backup catcher to the biggest players out there. You go through and you read the interviews that they've done. You look through their Twitter retweets. You look at their tagged photos on Instagram. You talk to former teammates. You talk to coaches. You try to understand these guys as people. Maybe what their partners do and where they want to spend spring training. These are the kind of questions that not all of them can be answered. But if you like really do that deep dive, maybe you cross a couple of guys off your list. Maybe you realize, look, we love, let's say, for example, Tanner Scott. We think he's a perfect fit for the bullpen. But in all of these comments, he talks about how he wants to, and I'm making this up, but he wants to live in California. So, you know, this is the West Coast guy who wants to stay in California, whatever the case. That's probably not where you want to spend your energy. And conversely, there might be people out there where, hey, they want to train in Florida, or player development is really, really important to them. And they love baseball tech and they're a nerd on this stuff. And so in your presentation to them, you index on the player development facility in Florida and the resources that the Blue Jays have in Toronto. Because for some guys, that's going to be a big deal. The Blue Jays facilities are legitimately good. So that could be something that you use to try to persuade them. Just as a couple examples, I think that doing that sort of digging in the course of these next few weeks is a potential separator. Because look, we all can go to Zips and see that a certain player is projected for a 115 WRC plus, or a certain reliever is projected for a strikeout rate of 26%. And that's great and that's useful information, but everyone has that information and you're not really going to separate yourself one way or the other by using that information. So yeah, I just wonder to what extent the Blue Jays do that and to what extent teams do that. It's something that teams look at. And yeah, I'd be fascinated to know. But I think this is that time of year where regardless of how they do it, maybe it's numbers, maybe it's, you know, everyone comes up with their own internal ranking of free agents independently. Let's say the Blue Jays have 15 front office members who are involved in this process. They each come up with their rankings independently in a silo, and then they come together and debate and try to find how to rank them from those evaluations that began independently. Whatever method the Blue Jays use or whatever methods teams use, it's a really important time because once October ends and the free agency period begins, you don't want to waste time. You don't want to be caught waiting for something. And remember, Juan Soto, this is going to take a while. It's not, Juan Soto is not going to sign on November 10th. I can promise you that. So the whole market will wait. Teams are slow. This stuff takes time to develop. So you got to have a plan. The better you have that plan in place, the more likely you are to actually get something good. And I look back to 2020, which was, you know, the Jays have had some really bad off seasons. No question about that. 2020 into 21, that was a really good off season. And what they did in the first week of November that year is they signed Robbie Ray to a 1-year deal. And to me, that's not a deal that you wake up one morning and you decide on a whim to sign Robbie Ray. That is the product of planning, and it's the product of getting to know the player, which they had the chance to do late that season. So now is the time for the Blue Jays to set that planning in motion. And then November comes, boom, you make your moves in a targeted way. There are a lot of free agents out there. There are a lot of teams. Some of these teams are going to want to slow play it. You have a potential advantage if you want to move aggressively, but you have to know which ones to go for. So I hope that makes some sense. It's something I was thinking about, all of which to say, October is a month of planning for this front office, and those plans are going to be really important because, look, we all know it didn't work out last year, 88 losses, team that was basically non-competitive all season in a league where it wasn't that hard to be competitive. Anyway, no need to rehash 2024. We all know how it ended. We'll see what this offseason brings. Of course, we'll be covering it on sportsnet.ca and on at the letters as well. So with that, I will step away. I'll thank you for listening to this week's episode and thank Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade as well. Thanks once again for listening in to At the Letters.